So think back to when you first got your driver's
Oh
license.
man, a terrifying time for everyone on the road.
Right. But you probably spent, I mean, hours hunched over that official state rule book.
Oh, absolutely. Memorizing stopping distance.
Exactly, down to the foot. You learned the exact hierarchy of right-of-way rules, and like you could probably identify the specific meaning of every road sign shape just by its silhouette.
Which is really just the theory of driving in a perfectly sterile vacuum.
Yes.
You pass the multiple choice test, the DMV stamps your paperwork, and officially, at least on paper, you are a fully certified driver.
On paper, yeah. But fast forward, say, 8 months.
Right.
You're merging onto this chaotic, rain-slicked highway during rush hour. Someone is riding your bumper, the lanes are completely obscured by water, and you have like a split second to make a decision.
Yeah, you aren't exactly reciting page 42 of the manual in your head.
Absolutely not. You rely entirely on your environment, your gut instincts, and honestly, how you're watching the people immediately around you navigate that exact same stretch of road.
Which is exactly the psychological reality we are applying to corporate America today.
Yes, welcome to the deep dives, everyone. Our mission today is to unpack this really fascinating framework on corporate compliance.
It's a framework that pretty much proves why the standard corporate training model is just fundamentally broken.
Completely broken. And we'll also uncover this hidden, totally untapped resource that actually dictates how people behave at work.
It really is a critical paradigm shift.
Okay.
Because right now, I mean, organizations spend staggering amounts of money and time on annual compliance training.
Oh, the annual training.
Yeah, we're talking sweeping code of conduct courses, lengthy policy acknowledgments, and those, the ones mandatory modules that roll out every January.
Let's just be honest about those modules for a second. We all know the shared human experience of Corporate Compliance Month.
Oh, the dreaded email in your inbox.
Right. You log in, you ignore the poorly acted video of a fictional workplace conflict.
It's always so bad.
So bad. And you just keep clicking next until you find the most painfully obvious right answer to the quiz. Like, should you accept a briefcase full of cash from a vendor? A, yes. B, no.
Right. It's an exercise in sheer apathy.
Yeah, exactly.
And that apathy, it actually stems from a foundational flaw in how companies view learning.
How so?
Well, the framework we are analyzing today points out that companies treat this training as a simple broadcast delivery system.
Okay.
The assumption is purely transactional, like the organization transmits the information, the employee receives it, and therefore, boom, the employee is compliant.
The box is checked for the auditors.
Exactly.
Ugh.
But from a behavioral psychology standpoint, that is a wildly dangerous assumption to make.
Because, I mean, it assumed human memory works like a hard drive. You just download the file and it's there forever.
But it's not.
No, the data we're looking at proves the exact opposite, especially when it comes to the forgetting curve.
The mechanics of the forgetting curve are actually incredibly humbling. The brain is an efficiency machine. It actively prunes information that it deems contextually irrelevant to your immediate survival or your daily routine.
So if you aren't using it, you lose it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Researchers found that in human behavior change, skills and values formed in an isolated training environment, they decay incredibly fast if they lack environmental triggers.
Wow.
Yeah, without follow-up in the actual flow of work, employees retain as little as 30% of training content. And that's within just 1 week.
Wait, 30% in 7 days.
In 7 days.
So by month eight, when an employee actually encounters a questionable situation, that annual training module is effectively gone.
On.
The brain has completely overwritten it with the actual priorities of the daily grind.
Which means compliance behavior isn't formed in a vacuum, and it certainly isn't forged in a one-hour online module.
No.
It is shaped relentlessly by the immediate daily environment.
So think about your own job for a second. Have you ever faced a real gray area at work?
Oh, I'm sure everyone has.
Right. A moment where, say, a vendor offers an unusually generous gift, or maybe a project lead casually suggests you fudge a regulatory deadline just by a few days to hit a quarterly quota.
It happens all the time.
All the time. And when that friction happens, you don't think of the chief compliance officer. You don't try to summon the ghost of that annual training video.
You look at your immediate boss.
Exactly. You think about what your manager would do or what they've subtly rewarded in the past.
Because the social hierarchy dictates the behavioral reality. In those moments of friction, an employee's instinct is really simply a mirror.
A mirror.
Yeah, reflecting the environment their manager has created. The manager is the most credible, visceral source of authority.
Right.
Yet the data highlights that most compliance programs completely sideline managers.
They treat the manager like every other employee.
Exactly. Just another name on a spreadsheet who needs to finish their module by Friday.
Okay, I have to play devil's advocate here, though.
Yeah.
If we acknowledge that the manager is the linchpin, isn't it actually a massive liability to rely on them for compliance?
What do you mean?
Well, let's say my manager is a brilliant software engineer or like a top-tier marketing director. They aren't a lawyer.
Right.
What if an employee asks a highly technical question about the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, the FCPA?
Oh, the FCPA.
Yeah. Getting the answer wrong on international bribery laws could mean millions of dollars in federal fines. I mean, DOJ investigations. Real jail time.
Yeah, it's serious.
We cannot expect middle management to navigate the nuances of federal law.
I would take it a step further and say you absolutely shouldn't expect them to.
Okay, phew.
Yeah, that fear, the fear of a manager giving the wrong legal advice, that's the exact trap that paralyzes organizations and keeps compliance officers from utilizing managers.
That makes sense.
But the framework we are exploring solves this by radically redefining the manager's role.
How so?
Well, it requires understanding what the role is not before we can understand what it actually is.
Which is a huge relief. Because honestly, if I am a mid-level manager and HR tells me I'm now personally responsible for interpreting compliance law for my team,
you're quitting.
I am immediately updating my resume.
And it would be a wildly unfair expectation. So let's clear the air.
Yeah.
Managers are not policy experts.
Yeah.
They don't need to memorize the specific legal threshold for a gift violation in the UK versus the US.
Right.
They are not investigators either. If a serious concern is raised, investigating that claim belongs strictly to HR or the legal team.
Not the marketing director.
Exactly. Furthermore, they are not expected to design or run formal tracked training sessions with slide decks and learning objectives.
So no PowerPoints.
No PowerPoints. They're not mini compliance officers.
Okay, so if we strip away all the legal interpretation, the investigations, and the formal training, what is actually left for them to do?
What's left is a role that is surprisingly small in scope, but vastly more impactful in practice.
Okay, I'm listening.
The role is simply to be a visible, consistent signal that compliance actually matters to the business.
A signal?
Yes. And the research breaks this down into three highly practical behaviors. The first is what they call light touch teaching.
Okay, when you say light touch, my immediate fear is that we are asking a manager to stop a productive meeting to give like a spontaneous 5-minute moral lecture.
Nobody wants that.
That sounds completely exhausting and totally unnatural.
It would be. Which is why light touch teaching is specifically designed to be a 30-second intervention.
30 seconds. Yeah.
When a moment presents itself organically in the flow of work, the manager doesn't lecture. They just acknowledge the boundary.
Just a passing comment.
Exactly. Like, hey, before we reply to that vendor, let's do a quick check against our conflict of interest policy. Or let's make sure we document this decision carefully. The timing of this filing really matters.
I love that because it operates exactly like a pace car in a race.
Ooh, a pace car.
Yeah. Think about it. The pace car doesn't build the track. It didn't write the rules of the sport.
Right.
But the moment it slows down or adjusts its position, all the drivers behind it instinctively adjust their speed.
Yes.
The manager is just setting the pace, signaling to the team that, hey, we actually check the mirrors before we merge.
That is a phenomenal way to visualize it. The manager sets the speed. And the psychological mechanism at play here is contextual encoding.
Contextual encoding.
The brain remembers that 30-second intervention because it is attached to a real project, a real vendor, a real deadline.
It's grounded in reality.
Exactly. The cumulative effect of those 30-second pacing moments over a year completely dwarfs any standalone annual training.
I believe it.
The second required behavior builds on this, running a monthly team discussion. And the vital distinction here is discussion, not training.
Because training is about like a one-way delivery of information, whereas a discussion is about building judgment.
Precisely.
We're talking about, what, a 15-minute chat during an existing team meeting?
Correct. The goal of this 15-minute chat isn't to impart new legal knowledge. The goal is to surface and explore rationalization.
Surface rationalization.
Yeah. You present the team with a realistic scenario. And you actually let them explain why they might be tempted to make the wrong choice.
Oh, wow. So they say things like, we're going to miss our Q3 numbers if we don't cut this corner.
Right.
Or the client is screaming at us and we need to fix it now. You let them voice the cognitive dissonance out loud.
You have to let them voice it.
Yeah.
The human brain is incredibly skilled at motivated reasoning.
Oh, for sure.
We rarely make bad ethical choices because we want to be evil.
Right. Nobody thinks they're the villain.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We make them because we seduce ourselves into thinking the context justifies the shortcut.
Yeah.
So by letting the team voice the wrong choice and then revealing the right answer,
yeah,
you create a tension in the room. The gap between their rationalization and the actual policy is where true learning happens.
It's the difference between reading a playbook and actually scrimmaging. You don't just sit in a classroom, read the football rule book once a year, and expect to win the Super Bowl.
No, the coach is out there on the field with you.
Running the drill, stopping the play, giving you a 30-second correction while your heart is actually pumping.
They are helping you build ethical muscle memory.
Ethical muscle memory. I like that.
But building that muscle memory requires a safe environment to practice in.
True.
And that leads directly to the third and perhaps most vital part of the manager's role.
Which is?
Establishing psychological safety so people can speak up. The research on corporate speak-up culture is incredibly consistent and, frankly, a bit sobering.
Why sobering?
When employees see a violation and choose not to report it, it's rarely because they don't know how to use the whistleblower hotline.
Right.
It is almost always because they look at their immediate manager and decide it is not psychologically safe to do so.
That is a chilling thought.
It really is.
Because when we read the news about these massive corporate scandals, the banking frauds, the emissions cheating, the data cover-ups, those disasters almost always started months or years earlier with a mid-level employee who saw something wrong.
And said nothing.
Right. They looked at their boss's demeanor and thought, nope, it is safer for my career if I just keep my mouth shut.
The lack of safety is the silent killer of compliance programs. A manager who establishes that questions are genuinely welcome, who responds to a raised concern without minimizing the issue or instantly retaliating,
yeah,
that manager is worth their weight in gold.
Okay, but if the stakes are this high and the solution is this straightforward 30-second pace car moments, a 15-minute monthly chat, and just being a supportive human being,
right?
Why aren't managers already doing this? I mean, if compliance officers know managers are the key, why are they keeping them on the bench?
Well, when you ask compliance teams about this gap, they usually fall back on two broad assumptions.
Okay.
They claim managers either don't care about compliance or they are simply too busy trying to hit their business targets to bother with it.
Which sounds suspiciously like passing the buck.
Target.
It's easier to blame the manager's attitude than to examine the system itself.
The researchers argue those assumptions are entirely fundamentally flawed. The real problem isn't apathy.
Then what is it?
It is a complete lack of infrastructure. No one has given these managers a framework or a specific scenario they can actually use without having to spend 2 hours researching and prepping for it on a Sunday night.
Oh, we are essentially asking them to mine the iron ore, forge the steel, build the car, and then drive the pace car.
Yes.
We're expecting them to act as instructional designers on top of their day jobs.
It is an unreasonable and impossible ask. The analysis refers to this as the tools gap.
The tools gap.
Requesting a manager to facilitate a nuanced, legally accurate ethical discussion without providing pre-built materials pretty much guarantees failure.
Of course it does.
The legal expertise needs to be baked into the scenario content provided to them, not demanded from the manager's own head.
So we have to give them the fully assembled car.
Yeah.
And the framework we're exploring today doesn't just diagnose this tools gap, right? It actually lays out a highly specific psychological playbook for closing it.
It does. They call it the monthly discussion model.
Okay.
And instead of a massive annual data dump, it operates on this fascinating 4-week cadence designed around habit building.
The psychology of that cadence is what really makes it work, I think. It is engineered to be incredibly low friction for the manager while gradually escalating the cognitive tension for the employee.
That's right.
Let's actually break down how that escalation works. So week one is purely about signaling, right?
Yes. The manager gets a 2-minute email, just a short, compelling summary of the month's topic, like data privacy or conflicts of interest.
Okay.
The manager literally just hits forward to their team. It takes 2 minutes of effort, but the entire team suddenly knows, okay, the boss is putting compliance on the radar this month.
It establishes the environment.
Exactly. Then we move into weeks 2 through 4, which deploy the scenario emails.
Mm-hmm.
And the delivery mechanism here is crucial.
Right, because there are no clunky learning management systems to log into.
No forgotten passwords.
No clicking through animated slides for an hour.
Just a 2 to 3 minute read directly in their normal inbox.
Yeah.
It meets them where the actual work happens.
But it's the escalation of the scenarios that I find so brilliant. You don't just hit them with the hardest question on day one.
If you hit them with the hardest question immediately, they check out. Week two is designed to be clear cut.
Like a warm up.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's a scenario where most people will read it, easily guess the right answer, understand the basic boundary, and move on. It builds baseline confidence.
Okay, but week three?
Week three is where the psychological design kicks in. Week three introduces real, messy tension.
The wrong choice starts to sound incredibly logical.
Yeah, it usually comes attached to a compelling business rationalization, like saving a major client relationship.
The brain starts trying to seduce itself.
It really does.
Yeah.
And then week four brings the hammer down.
Week four is the hard case.
Oh, yeah. It surfaces the absolute, most common, most seductive rationalization for that specific topic.
It's the scenario that actually makes you sweat a little bit because it perfectly mimics the pressure of a real Tuesday afternoon.
And that sets up the climax of the month, the meeting.
Okay, tell us about the meeting.
During a regular, already scheduled team meeting, the manager takes 15 minutes. They read that week four scenario out loud to the room.
Right.
They ask for a simple show of hands. Who thinks the answer is A, B, or C? They get a few people to defend their choices.
Okay.
Then the manager reveals the correct answer and, importantly, explains why the wrong choices feel so tempting.
And then comes the absolute kicker.
Yes.
After the answer is revealed, the manager asks one vital, open-ended question to the room.
Has anyone seen something like this happen here? What did you do?
That single question is the linchpin that holds the entire model together.
It really is.
Because that question completely destroys the illusion that compliance is just a hypothetical checklist for the auditors. It drags the conversation out of theory and forces it directly into the team's actual messy day-to-day reality. You can't hide behind a multiple choice button anymore.
The psychological shift in the room when that question is asked is profound. If it is asked in a safe environment by a trusted manager, it does more to build a genuine speak-up culture than 100 hotline posters in the break room.
Oh, absolutely.
It normalizes talking about the gray areas. But the true brilliance of this model is what happens after the meeting.
What happens after?
People will share things. They will admit, actually, a vendor did offer me front row tickets last week, and I wasn't totally sure where the line was.
Which gives the manager incredibly valuable insight into the pressures the team is actually facing.
Exactly. And this is how the model completely closes the corporate feedback loop. When managers report back the overarching themes and the specific rationalizations they hear during these 15-minute chats,
yeah,
the chief compliance officer suddenly gets real-time, actionable signals. They learn exactly where the company's ethical vulnerabilities actually are.
Which is behavioral data an annual click-through quiz can literally never provide.
Never.
The quiz only tells you if an employee knows how to identify the most obvious right answer to move to the next slide. The team discussion actually tells you what pressures they are facing in the field and how they are justifying their shortcuts.
It transforms compliance from a blind broadcast system into a highly tuned listening network.
It fundamentally changes how you view corporate structure and human behavior.
It does.
To summarize the core realization here for you listening,
yeah.
It truly does not matter if you are an entry-level employee, a mid-level manager trying to hold a team together, or sitting up in the C-suite.
Nope.
You have to understand that workplace behavior is shaped locally. It is not shaped universally. Mm. A massive multi-million dollar corporate training apparatus is ultimately powerless against the subtle daily signals sent by your immediate supervisor.
The research reveals a truth that is both deeply empowering and honestly a little daunting. Managers are already shaping compliance behavior by default. Right now, today, whether the company equips them to do it or not.
They are driving the pace car whether they realize it or not.
Exactly. Which leaves us with a final thought to ponder. If managers are silently programming their team's compliance behavior every single day through their actions, their 30-second passing comments, and what they choose to ignore,
right.
It makes you wonder, what other unwritten corporate values or behavioral norms is your manager silently programming into your team right now, completely outside of the official company handbook?
Wow. That is a lens that changes how you see every meeting, every email thread, and every quick chat by the coffee machine. You aren't just driving based on the manual you read months ago. You're driving based on the traffic around you.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We highly encourage you to look at your own workplace dynamics and the unwritten rules of your own environment through this new perspective. See you next time.